So I'm very grateful towards the organizers of this program for having me here. I've learned a lot. So today I'm going to give a short talk on this joint work that I've done with Alberto Rosso and Raul Santatierra in my home lab. And the talk will be based on this work. So I will start by doing a brief introduction to conformal invariance, what kind of conformal invariance we are looking at. So we look at conformal invariance in 2D, and there is some general conditions under which when the system on 2D is at criticality or you have a scaling invariance, you will automatically gain conformal invariance, and that will give you a lot of fantastic properties. One classic example is this critical population. So it's very simple. You take a triangular lattice. On each side of the lattice, you put a spin, and you flip a coin according to which you select the spin to be up and down. And on this lattice, when the threshold is 1.5, when the probability of selecting up is at the threshold, these loops that separate up and down spins and also the clusters of the same spins become very non-trivial. So now some pictures for larger systems. When you run out of criticality, you see that the loops are really small and the clusters are really small. That's not very interesting. But at the criticality, it's only interesting when you go to the large system, infinite system limits, the loops and the clusters become fractal. So this picture of some long loops in this configuration is the same. Now, so much for the pictures. Now we want some numbers. So what can we measure in this looping example? The simplest and most standard observables are these loop and a cluster endpoint functions. So defined in this way. So for the loops, you can ask the question. I take three points on the plane and I ask whether they are on a loop, because the loops are random. So this is the probability that depends on the position of three points. Okay. Then you have this cluster endpoint function. For example, when n is equal to 3, you take 3 points. You ask whether they are not separated by any of the loops. That is whether they are connected in one connected component cluster. And that's also a function of the position of the points. Now, if your system is a scaling invariant, which is the case at the criticality, the simple scaling invariant implies that this function goes as a power law, and you have a critical exponent here. And for critical population, it has been calculated 30 years ago. I think there are reverse results on this now. Now, conformal invariance gives much stronger results. In fact, it tells you that if you divide the three-point function by two-point functions suitably combined, so that the whole is without dimension. Here, A is a constant that depends on the lattice. Here, if you do this, you will cancel these dimension four quantities, and you will get a constant. And this constant is dimensionless. It is independent of the points that you choose, and it is independent of the lattice that you choose. Oh, I'm sorry. Here it's not x y. It should be x y y z and x z. But in the case when x y z are on an equilateral triangle, it's true. Okay. In general, it should be.
What's capital C?
Capital C. Well. In principle, this is a function that depends on three positions. Now, it turns out that when the system is conformally invariant, it is independent of x, y, and z. So we call it capital C. And the capital C depends on whether you consider clusters or loops. So So for critical percolation, the cluster three-point constant has been calculated, but quite recently it was a non-trivial result. And for the Lewis three-point constant, it has been measured numerically, but not yet calculated.
I guess my question: what's the role of capital C besides being a constant?
Okay, it's kind of the building block of the theory. So imagine you have a Lie algebra. The Lie algebra is defined by this C I J K.
It's the same C.
It's the same C. Yes. Yes. In fact, when you have these, you can go into you define the theory, you define this structure constant of the theory, and that's the algebraic part of the conformal field theory. You consult the ideal of book.
So if I take one of the points out to infinity, these survive. These constants are unchanged.
Well, it the constants it survives. When the three points are far away enough compared to the lattice size and the distance is small enough compared to the system size, and later on the plot we will see that if you take triangles at the system size it will not survive. There's a scaling region where all these statements hold, and we are interested in this scaling region.
I'm confused by one thing. If I take one point out to infinity, don't I pick up the correlations associated with the percolation backbone in that case? Wouldn't they have different scaling dimensions than the cluster or the loops?
I don't think I understand.
Well,
if I ask only
about the conductive paths, or the paths that are connected out to infinity, then doesn't that set have a different scaling dimension than the clusters as a whole? Because then I'm not interested in the dangling ends of the clusters.
I think if I naively take this equation and take one point to infinity, you end up with that two-point function because there are some cancellations. But maybe we can discuss later.
So this thing is a field theoretical object when you describe the percolation by field theory. At every point there is an operator, and it's a correlation function of three operators, three-point function. So it has a coefficient. In general, the coefficient is non-universal, and if you divide by this thing downstairs, you get a universal number. So it's just a very general feature of any conformal. So the questions you're asking has something to do with the definition rather. So if whatever O is the point signal in a cluster, then you just measure these operators where the points all sit in the clusters, and it automatically knows about the issues you're mentioning.
Okay, now we will switch subject. We'll talk about a little bit about Lorentz tilings. So why we study this? Because we were interested in 2 plus 1 DKPZ and in general in 2 plus 1 D rough surfaces, and Lorentz tiling provides a discretization, a bound discrete model of rough surfaces, and it has a high function. When you see this Lorentz tiling, you see there are fields higher than the. I will show you the high function.
What's the connection with these tilings with what you said previously?
I will come to that in two slides. So in these tilings, you have a high function which is the numbers. So I'm sorry for half of the people here because you might be seeing the opposite sign. It depends really on your brain. So naturally, when you have a height function, you can draw the level lines. The lines are over constant height, and the way you draw it is by doing this local construction. For 3 seconds, and you know it works. Now you have another example of loops, which are called in the literature fully packed loops, which are constructed in this the other way, because in each Rose entry you either do this or this. We don't want the lines to cross. So these are the only two ways of constructing, of playing with loops. Now, why is it called fully packed loops, and why is it, are they connected to percolation? So I want to.
Sorry. These two pictures are related.
They are the same, I think. The Lorentz tiling is the same.
Yes.
I draw different loops on them, on the same Lorentz tiling configuration.
So you change it from horizontal to
vertical.
Yeah.
What integers are you allowing to live on the vertices? On the left, you have twos. Negative ones. Can I have negative twos?
Yeah, you can. The height is defined modulo a constant. You choose the point. Let me say that I choose it to be zero, and then you decide anything. And there is also a choice of a sign. We can say I go up here, and you will have opposite signs. Now I can come to this. So I want to show two pictures. So you see the spins are exactly the same. And in this picture you see a Lorentz tiling drawing black, right? The Lorentz tiling. Oh, sorry. And in the other you don't see it. It's just a triangular, a completely triangular lattice. Sorry. So what happened? What is so particular about this spin configuration on this triangle lattice that makes it a Lorentz tiling? In fact, if you look at each triangle, for each triangle the spins are frustrated. You have two plus spins or one and one non spin and one non spin or vice versa. And in fact, this is a bijection. You have when the spin configurations on the triangular lattice, you can do the Lorentz tiling by just removing this bound with same spin. And then the FPLs, the fully packed loops, are just the percolation frontier loops that we draw from the beginning. So that's why percolation and these FPLs appear always together.
How do you sample the Lorentz tiling?
I'll come to that. Now, how do I sample it? So the way we sample them is to study dynamics. We run Monte Carlos and we put the microbial dynamics on. In general, you can put two kinds of them. You can put these reversible dynamics. So when you have a cube, you remove it, and when you don't have a cube, you add it. I'm sorry for those who think of it. And with the same rate. Now it is not hard to see that the steady state of this dynamics is equal probability for every configuration, and this is the equilibrium state, and the loop ensembles, the two loop ensembles associated to this probability state is well understood by these people. There is a field theory, and I will come back to that. And then you can do this 2+1 DKPV dynamics. In which you break really the reversibility. You can put different PQ. This is analog of TASEF. You can only remove or add Lorentz. You can do general PQ and whenever there is a non-asymmetry, you break you are in the KPV, you're in 2+1 DKPV class. And this model was proposed by Olijar and Fido, and it was studied in a Happy Haley 2013 paper when he shown that many this kind of lattice models are in the same universal class. So now we want to ask the question whether The looping samples that we studied, that we introduced, are affected by moving from EW to KBD. So this is the answer. For Edward Wikinger, we are not telling anything new. We are just confirming the results of earlier results. So the FPLs, the loops look just like percolation in frontiers. You have the same constants and the same exponents, and the level lines are Gaussian free field level lines because this pattern is converged to the Gaussian free field.
So, sir, now with percolation, you choose only mass of the frontier.
Yes. For this.
They have the same exponents as the correlation for it.
Yes. This is non-trivial, but this was in the school. Now, when you go to KPZ, what we see is that these loops are not touched, and these loops are completely changed, and the exponent changes, and they lose the constancy of the 3-point contours.
So this result is numerics.
Yes. All we are talking about. And so this is the main result, and I just show some plots.
Can you remind us what chi and c was?
I can show it here. Chi is the slope, the power law slope. This is a log. Chi is the slope of these lines.
The 2-point function.
The 2-point function, yes. And the c is the ratio between the 3-point functions. The c is this. So it should be a constant. So you see that when you are at the latest size, it is not really the good constant. This is analytical prediction by Delfino or VT. And when you approach the system size, you are also off. But in the middle, you're quite good. Or you're very good. In fact, this is three digits. And this is for the loops. Well, we try the different shapes of triangles and other things, because for the loops there is no analytical prediction, so we have to compare the results with the measures on square lattices and measures done by other people. But it works. All the constants collapse, and for the 2-point functions, it also works. But what is striking here is when you move from percolation to Edward Wikinger, which is blue, you change the constant, you change the non-universal constant. Well, that's normal. But when you move from Edward Wikinger to KPZ, even the constant doesn't change here for the 2-point. The non-universal constant doesn't change. So we don't have a clear understanding why this should be happening, because
this height 1/3, is it the KPZ 1/3?
No. You are talking about this one?
Yes.
No. This is some numerical conjecture. I will come to that. There's nothing to do with the 1D exponents. And then, okay, this is for the fully packed loops. And now I will come to the second column of this table. So here I only plotted the 3-point functions, 3-point over 2-point ratios of the loops. So you have Edward Wikinger level lines, which is roughly a constant, You have the KPZ level line, which does not show any constant. And we also try the clusters and other things. And the third line, why we measure that? Because in the literature, Seberi et al. Conject that the KPT level lines are the same as the percolation external parameter. And they did many numerics, but the first evidence is that the KPZ exponent, this exponent, is close to the value of the correlation external parameter. So we measure the if the correlation. I'll explain this. Yeah. So
before you explain that, can you explain these graphs? I don't quite understand what you're plotting. On the y-axis is the.
On the y-axis is the ratio. Is a ratio. Yeah.
Why are you choosing to plot it in the way you chose on the x-axis? I don't see convergence there. I mean, I do see convergence over a very small range of r. But why is it decaying so dramatically at large r?
Well, the system size is here. So when you are one digit from to the system size, you're starting to become off. But remind that you.
Is this for fixed system size? All of these curves?
These curves are for the same system size of 2000, and here you have different system size in there. They all go down there. And I also remind this y-axis there. If you zoom out a little bit, it's a straight line. Here you are off by 2 and 3 digits. And we can compare the precision with the more extensive results on percolation done by I don't remember after the Delfino and Vitz paper. They have consistent convergence with larger system sizes. So because here you can see that the y-axis is from 1 to 4 and the KPT 3-point function is really not constant, and here the numerics is we didn't try hard because we wanted to prove this. So this tells us that the conjecture is in big trouble, and
external parameter.
I'm sorry. so so these are the frontiers. So if you look at this picture, you see that it comes back to itself. To go along. There are many bridges. It's hard to find because
that's plausible.
Yeah. So I will do a cartoon picture.
The external perimeter is when you bridge the lattice scale pinch points.
Yeah. I will draw the cartoon. So if you put a boundary infinite condition so that the percolation is white here, for example, and you have a frontier like this, the frontier is doing always this kind of thing. And to have the external parameter, you need to say these are 1/3. Then you need to obtain the external parameter, you need to say these are all ones. So you change from this curve to this curve. Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
It's the loop erased loop in his language.
But it's quite tricky because it's not symmetric in black and white. You only do the jaws. You don't do the islands.
It's also the boundary of the backbone that I previously mentioned.
Yeah. So let me explain just briefly. These results, well, we don't have a real explanation. That they say we don't know how to derive these analytically, but there is a heuristic explanation that is you should know something about the field theory of this steady state, which is done by this table. So the field theory of this steady state tells you that it, all of your observables decouple into two sectors, and these the three-point functions, the observables that we considered for the two different looping samples belong to two decoupled sectors, and the decoupling is happening in the field theory in the continuum limit. Now our explanation for why KPT does this to all these loops is that KPT affects the sector associated to these loops, but not not the sector associated to these loops. And we believe that this should be true for other looping samples, other such systems which are described by this kind of field theory of multiple components. So okay, let me conclude a little bit. Can conformal errors survive KPT? We don't think so. At least we didn't find anything that survives. But you can fool people into believing so, because we were fooled into believing. We were very excited when we see this. We believed that we found something in conformal errors in KPT. In the end, this is something that we believe that is decoupled to the real KPT, which is still quite hard to understand. So thank you very much.
Shedding any light on the question about 2D turbulence? So 2D turbulence at some point was conjectured to have potentially some conformal symmetry.
Yeah, this work is partly motivated by that work, and we would like to say something about their conjecture, because they also found a critical population.
Yes.
So when we found critical population in KPT, we were very excited. We thought that it was the same thing because KPT can be mapped to Burgers turbulence. But in the end, we were a little bit disappointed, because it looked like that these populations are just something that decoupled to the real KPT. So we don't have statements on the turbulence. That's a fantastic subject, a fantastic measure.
But concretely, has anybody studied the three-point functions?
No. That's not a good point.
It shouldn't be that difficult, or is it, why has not been done? Because nobody thought about it, or because it's intrinsically difficult numerically to extract that information for the turbulence?
Well, first, you need the machine to run the 2D turbulence. Then I think when Denis Bernard and these people they studied this, they were looking for SLE type observables. And maybe it's a good idea to look at the three-point function, because at that time the three-point function result was not out. It was 2006, and then 5 years later.
Going in a similar direction, but you know, still slightly different. Like, first of all, I mean, sort of two related questions. I mean, is there any good reason to believe that the steady state should be conformal invariant in the first place? And secondly, I mean, I think it's a relevant, interesting question. But you know, I mean, is this system this loss interest, I mean, is that actually really sort of? I mean, why would this be a good candidate to test the issue of conformal invariance? I mean, maybe one could think about other systems or other observables, I mean, to test the hypothesis.
Yeah, I agree. In the first place, there's no apparent reason to believe there's conformal invariant to KPT. For example, if you just take the height function, we don't believe so. This is why we studied these loop observables instead of the height you can define the height correlations. So we want to look for possible conformal invariants elsewhere. Mm-hmm. That's a search. And considering the second question, yes, in fact, in fact, it is not very evident that these lattice models really are good candidates for KPG, because we know that if we want to measure the roughness exponent from 2 plus 1, these lattice models are not really performant. And here we were really motivated by the appearance of percolation, which are numerically really performant, and so we didn't look at the classical observables of 2 plus 1 KPG in our system, which are not very good.
If you look just at critical percolation, you can interpret the transfer matrix. Now I'm talking 1 plus 1. You can interpret it as a stochastic process.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it would have a conformally varying stationary state.
Right, that's 1 plus 1.
That's 1 plus 1 here. So my question really is that somehow related to, or could it be related?
And it's one just on peanuts. There is one example of formally varying steady state.
But in one
plus one, or in
yeah, one plus one.
But then the steady state is quite dimensional.
Well, yeah, but all the exponents are quite dimensional. It's like light speed.
But then the space time is
it's different. But
yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether it's very different. It's always difficult to go from D to D plus 1.
Sure. There's, in two dimensions, there's two different KPGs, isotropic. The anisotropic is supposed to have Gaussian free fields as its invariant measure, and there are certain discrete versions of it. Actually, some Hyland models of this sort. So for those, presumably your conformal invariant sort of stuff will...
That should survive, because anyhow this column is not your KPG isotropic or inotropic or whatever.
But what about, so you have then understanding the temporal evolution of these objects.
Ah, that's completely outside the scope of this study, because we are interested in steady state equal time